So there is this invisible parasite operating in your life right
Oh,
now.
absolutely. Every single day.
Right. And if you don't build this very specific architectural framework to contain it today, it will eventually dictate basically everything: where you live, what you eat, the quality of your health care.
Even exactly when you are permitted to rest, it's completely pervasive.
It really is. It's this completely silent entity that feeds on a vacuum of intentionality.
Yes.
It's actively hunting for those spaces where your attention lapses.
Yes, the micro lapses. We'll definitely get into those.
Yeah, we have to, because today's deep dive is entirely dedicated to 11 words. Just 11 words that explain exactly how to build that cage and avoid becoming basically a passenger in your own
It's
existence.
an incredible piece of text, highly concentrated.
Insanely concentrated, we are looking at this highly provocative, incredibly dense piece of source material, and it literally just repeats a single phrase.
Right, it's just excerpts from How to Control Your Money Before It Controls You, How to Control Your Money Before It Controls You.
I mean, that's it. That's the whole source material for this deep dive.
But it is honestly a profound meditation on a single universal tension.
Exactly. We aren't dealing with a mountain of economic data here.
No complex manifestos on market dynamics or anything like that. We are dealing with the raw, uncompromising power dynamic between human beings and capital.
Right. It just isolates that one singular choice every individual faces. Either you systematically subjugate your resources, or, your resources will systematically subjugate you.
Yeah, there is zero neutral territory. None at all.
And I think that lack of neutral territory is what makes this so intensely personal for everyone listening.
Because everyone has to interact with capital. You literally can't opt out.
Right. It is the inescapable medium of modern survival. But what the source text does here, it strips away all the mechanics of budgeting.
It totally ignores them. It doesn't care about your spreadsheets.
Or your investment portfolio, or whatever app you're using, it is entirely focused on the behavioral psychology of autonomy.
Which is so much more important than the math, honestly.
I totally agree. So to actually understand the mechanisms at play here, we need to examine the specific linguistic architecture of this sentence.
Yes, let's break it down.
Let's start with the explicit promise of methodology at the very beginning: how to control your money.
That phrase is doing so much heavy lifting, it inherently rejects this deterministic view of financial outcomes.
Like the idea that you're just doomed to be bad at money.
Exactly. By leading with how to, the text establishes right away that managing capital is an acquired systematic
It's
methodology.
an active framework.
Right, an active framework that you have to construct in your brain. It is not some innate biological trait.
You aren't just born with a prefrontal cortex optimized for navigating fiat currency.
Or compounding interest. Our brains are definitely not wired for compounding interest.
No, definitely not. So the text suggests that the chaos of personal finance can actually be ordered through this specific learnable architecture.
Yes, it's a very optimistic opening in a way.
See, I kind of want to challenge the underlying optimism of that, though.
Oh, how so?
Well, presenting this as a simple how-to implies that the only barrier to financial autonomy is just like a lack of information.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Right. But if we look at behavioral economics, we know that an information deficit is rarely the actual problem.
No, we live in an era of infinite financial information. It's everywhere.
Exactly. The real problem is cognitive load. Building that methodology requires executive function.
And people are already so exhausted.
Yes. When people are already burnt out from just living life, handing them a how-to framework often just induces paralysis.
It becomes just one more chore.
Right. The methodology itself can become another source of overwhelm.
That is a really crucial distinction, and I think it goes directly to the word that follows in the text.
The word control.
Yes. The text doesn't say how to understand your money. It doesn't say how to organize your money. It specifically uses the word control.
Because understanding is passive.
Exactly. And organization is merely categorization. You can have a perfectly organized spreadsheet of your massive debt.
Wow, yeah. That's a painful thought, but it's true.
Right. Control implies the application of friction and directed force.
Okay, so going back to my point about cognitive load, how does that fit in?
Well, true control in a financial context actually means building systems that reduce the daily demand on your executive function.
Oh, I see. You do the hard work once.
Yes. Think of capital as essentially fluid energy.
Like water.
Exactly like water. If you pour water onto a table, it spreads chaotically based on the path of least resistance.
It just goes everywhere, makes a mess.
Right. So controlling it, means doing the hard work up front to carve out channels, automating your savings, setting hard boundaries on liquidity.
So that the daily cognitive burden is minimized. You don't have to decide to save every single day.
Precisely. You are building levies.
Okay, the levies analogy works really well, but let's look at the mechanism of that control for a second.
Sure, let's look at it.
When people hear the word control applied to their finances, I feel like the neurological response is often super defensive.
Oh, absolutely. It triggers a huge scarcity reflex.
Yeah, the brain instantly equates control with restriction. It feels like this localized famine is about to happen.
Like you're never allowed to buy a coffee again.
Right. But if we analyze the mechanics of intentionality, control isn't really about halting the flow of resources, is it?
No, not at all. It's about altering the velocity and the direction.
It is the difference between deprivation and direction.
That's a great way to put it. When the brain interprets financial control as deprivation, the amygdala fires up.
It's a fear center.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates a stress response that paradoxically makes us more susceptible to impulsive behaviors.
Wait, really? So feeling restricted actually makes you spend more?
Yes. We seek the immediate dopamine hit of a purchase just to soothe the stress of the restriction we imposed on ourselves.
Oh, wow. That is a vicious cycle.
It really is. So the methodology the text hints at requires a complete cognitive reframing.
So, going back to the water analogy, you are not damming the river to stop the water.
Right. You are damming it to build a hydroelectric plant.
I love that. You are harnessing the kinetic energy of your income to power your specific long-term objectives.
Exactly. You want to light up your own city, not just let the water flood the plains.
To bring this into an even more behavioral context, let's consider a different analogy. Think about taming a highly aggressive, incredibly powerful animal.
Okay, I'm with you.
Like, say you acquire a wild horse.
Mm.
It possesses immense kinetic potential. It literally has horsepower.
Right, tons of raw energy.
But if you simply turn it loose in an open field, its behavior is governed entirely by base instinct.
It's just going to do whatever it wants.
Exactly. It will seek the nearest food source or, you know, flee from the nearest loud noise.
Right, it's just reacting.
Yeah, it has absolutely no conceptualization of your desire to travel to a specific destination.
Because the horse lacks the capacity for abstraction or long-term planning. It operates entirely in the present moment, driven completely by immediate environmental stimuli.
Precisely. And human income acts exactly the same way when it's unguided.
Oh, that's a brilliant connection.
Right. If you don't overlay your executive function onto that income.
If you don't put a saddle on the horse and take the reins.
Yes. The income will simply respond to the loudest environmental stimuli.
It will flow toward the most aggressive marketing campaign.
Or the most frictionless purchasing system, or just the most immediate social pressure from your peers.
Oh, everyone's going out to dinner. I guess I am too.
Exactly. Taking control means forcing the raw power of that resource to submit to your long-term abstraction.
You have to align the horse's kinetic energy with your prefrontal cortex's map of the future.
You really do. And I feel like this brings us to a massive structural problem in modern society.
Oh, definitely. Which explains why the first half of this text is actually so incredibly difficult to execute in real life.
Yeah, because the modern consumer ecosystem is designed by highly sophisticated entities to actively prevent you from putting that saddle on the horse.
Yes. The system weaponizes our evolutionary biology against us.
How so? Like, break that down for us.
Well, as a species, we are wired to conserve energy, right? And that includes cognitive energy. Thinking takes calories.
Right. Our brains are lazy by design.
Exactly. So when corporations remove the friction from transactions.
Oh, like one-click purchasing.
Yes. One-click buying, biometric payments where you just look at your phone, auto-renewing subscriptions.
They are deliberately bypassing your prefrontal cortex.
They absolutely are.
Yeah.
They are hacking the path of least resistance.
They are creating this completely frictionless slide directly into your limbic system.
The emotional, impulsive part of the brain. Yes.
So the methodology of control, based on our source text, requires you to artificially reintroduce friction into your financial life.
Which feels so counterintuitive.
It does. It requires you to actively build speed bumps in a world that is heavily, heavily incentivized to pave over them.
Right. When the text demands that you learn how to control, it is practically demanding that you become deeply suspicious of convenience.
That's a great takeaway. Convenience is often just a mechanism to separate you from your agency without triggering your psychological alarm bell.
Exactly. It's a very quiet theft of your autonomy.
But let me play devil's advocate here. Is it really the system's fault?
What do you mean?
Well, if we view money as a neutral medium of exchange, the frictionless environment is just a tool, right?
Okay, I see where you're going.
Like a sharp knife can chop vegetables perfectly, or it can cause a severe injury.
Right, the knife is agnostic.
The knife doesn't have an agenda. So if someone is perpetually drained by microtransactions and auto renewals, maybe the issue isn't that the system is predatory.
You're saying the individual is just lacking discipline.
Yeah, maybe the individual has simply refused to establish any internal hierarchy of values.
That's a common argument for sure. But I would argue that treating modern capital markets as a neutral tool, like a knife, is a massive category error.
Oh, why is that?
Because a knife does not possess an algorithm designed by teams of behavioral psychologists to maximize your usage of the knife.
Wow. Okay, that is a fantastic point.
Right. The environments we navigate are actively hostile to financial autonomy.
Yeah.
They aren't neutral.
They have an agenda.
Yes, they utilize extremely potent principles, things like hyperbolic discounting, nudging, variable ratio reinforcement schedules.
All just to extract capital from you.
Exactly. It is an asymmetric war for your attention and your resources.
Yeah.
You are outgunned.
So while personal accountability is obviously the only way out,
Which is why the text commands you to take control, yes.
we still can't pretend the environment is passive. It's an active threat,
It absolutely is.
which perfectly bridges into the catastrophic pivot in the source text.
Yes. The second half.
The first half is the architecture, the methodology, the building of those levies we talked about. But the second half is where the text completely drops the illusion of a passive environment.
Before it controls you.
Before it controls you, it introduces a hostile entity.
It's a brilliant reversal of power.
It really is. The moment the text personifies money like that, it fundamentally alters the dynamic. It goes from a mechanical math problem to an existential threat.
Right, because it explicitly states that capital abhors a vacuum.
If you don't deliberately project your will onto your resources, the resources will develop a gravity of their own.
And that gravity will begin to dictate your behavior.
Let's analyze the mechanics of that subjugation.
I think we have to.
Because what does it actually mean, biologically and psychologically, for a human being to be controlled by an abstract concept like money?
It sounds like science fiction at first.
Right. We aren't talking about some scenario where coins become sentient and start giving you orders.
Thankfully, no.
We are talking about the measurable degradation of human agency.
Yes. To understand this, we really need to look at the research on scarcity mindsets.
Oh, this is fascinating stuff.
It is, particularly the work of behavioral economists like Senthil Melanathan and Eldar Shafir.
Right, what did they find?
They found that when an individual lacks financial control and they enter a state of chronic scarcity, it doesn't just make them feel sad or stressed.
It's not just an emotional response.
No, it literally hijacks their cognitive bandwidth.
Wow, literally hijacks it.
Yes. The brain perceives the lack of financial control as an immediate survival threat.
Like encountering a predator in the wild.
Exactly like that.
Yeah.
And because of that perceived threat, it forces the individual into a state known as tunneling.
Tunneling, the physiological narrowing of focus.
Exactly. When you are tunneling, your brain forcefully allocates all available working memory to the immediate crisis.
Like how to cover rent tomorrow.
Or how to hide from a debt collector today.
Right, the immediate fires that need putting out.
And because the brain is dedicating so much raw computational power to that immediate financial threat,
There's nothing left for anything else.
right, your functional IQ actually temporarily drops.
Wait, really? It actually lowers your IQ.
Yes, measurable drops in cognitive tests. You become significantly less capable of long-term planning. Your impulse control degrades.
So you make worse decisions because you're already in a bad spot.
Yes, you become highly susceptible to terrible trade-offs. Like, this is why people take out payday loans with a 400% interest rate.
Because they literally can't process the long-term
A
consequence.
tunneling prevents them from seeing the 400%. They only see the immediate survival mechanism.
That is terrifying. The money is literally dictating the neurological state of the brain.
It is determining the physical architecture of your thoughts. At that point, you are no longer making choices based on your values or your career aspirations or your relationships.
Everything is just about survival.
Every single decision is filtered entirely through the immediate demands of the capital deficit.
And that is what it means to be controlled by money.
Exactly. The abstract concept has effectively taken the reins of your biological operating system.
Man, that is intense. And this subjugation, it operates much like an invasive botanical species, I think.
Oh, I like this, like an invasive vine.
Yeah. If we look at the ecology of an invasive vine, its success relies entirely on the passivity of the host environment.
Right. It doesn't need to be aggressive if you just ignore it.
Exactly. A vine doesn't conquer a garden through a sudden violent explosion. It conquers through relentless incremental creeping.
Just inches a day.
Yes, it exploits these tiny micro vacuums of space and sunlight.
The mechanism of the takeover is silent compounding.
Silent compounding, yes. If a gardener operates under the delusion that there is like a neutral detentive between themselves and the vine,
If they assume that by just ignoring the vine will just stay in its corner.
right, they completely misunderstand the nature of the organism. The vine's biological imperative is to
It
expand.
has no other purpose.
It creeps along the soil, it wraps around the stalks of native plants, it climbs the infrastructure.
And it happens so slowly you barely notice it day to day.
But by the time the gardener actually realizes the scope of the problem, the vine's leaves have completely monopolized the canopy.
Blocking all the sunlight.
And its roots have monopolized the soil, starving all the native plants of nutrients.
That is a perfect analogy. The lack of active pruning was not a neutral state.
No, it was an active concession of territory.
And that botanical mechanism maps absolutely perfectly onto the psychology of financial avoidance.
Financial avoidance, which is huge, right?
It is the single most common human response to financial anxiety.
Just ignoring it.
Exactly. When people feel that creeping sensation of debt or they know they are overspending, what do? They stop opening their mail.
Oh, I've been there. You see the envelope from the credit card company and you just put it in a drawer.
Right. They delete the banking apps from their phones. They actively cultivate ignorance.
Because the reality of the situation just spikes their cortisol levels too much.
Exactly. It's too painful to look at.
But the avoidance is a total illusion of safety.
It is worse than an illusion, actually. It is an accelerant.
An accelerant. Because you're letting it grow in the dark.
Yes. By refusing to look at the bank account, you are not pausing the economic reality.
Right. The math doesn't stop just because you aren't looking at it.
Exactly. You are simply closing your eyes while the vine wraps around your throat.
Wow. That's a grim visual, but very accurate.
The avoidance ensures that the compounding mechanics of debt, the late fees, the penalty APRs, the compounding interest, they operate entirely unimpeded.
You've given them free rein.
And here is the real kicker, the fear you experience that prevents you from looking at the numbers. That fear is the control the money exerts over you.
Wait, say that again?
The anxiety itself is the evidence of your subjugation.
Man, if the anxiety is the evidence of subjugation, then the inverse must also be true, right?
How do you mean?
Well, the confrontation of the numbers, no matter how catastrophic they actually are, has to be the primary mechanism of reclaiming your agency.
Yes, absolutely. You have to strip the power away from the unknown.
Because the unknown is always scarier than the reality, even if the reality is bad.
Confrontation forces that abstract, terrifying anxiety back into the realm of concrete mathematics.
And mathematics can be solved.
Exactly. Vague, creeping dread cannot be solved. It can only be endured.
Right. But when you map out the exact parameters of the financial disaster, you stop that tunneling effect we talked about,
You define the boundaries of the predator.
which allows your executive function to come back online, right?
Yeah.
And you can finally begin formulating a methodology.
Yes. And that transition, moving from the passive endurance of anxiety to the active formulation of methodology, it hinges entirely on the temporal fulcrum of our source text.
With the fulcrum. Okay, we're moving to the third part.
Yes. The entire psychological weight of this 11-word sentence rests on one single word.
The word before.
Yes. How to control your money before it controls you.
Before. It really is the linchpin of the whole thing.
It introduces the tyranny of time.
The tyranny of time. I like that phrasing.
Before dictates that the power dynamic we're talking about is not static.
Right, it's constantly shifting.
Yeah. It is a actively deteriorating situation.
Yeah.
The word implies a finite window of leverage.
A threshold.
Yes, a threshold beyond which the physics of the situation fundamentally change.
Okay, let's really examine the mechanics of that threshold.
Let's do it.
Why is there a point of no return? If financial control is just a methodology, like we said earlier, shouldn't you be able to apply that methodology at any point in the timeline?
You would think so, logically.
Right. Why the intense regency of before?
Because of the underlying mathematics of momentum.
Momentum.
Yes, think about physics. In physics, momentum is mass times velocity.
Okay.
In finance, momentum is capital multiplied by time and interest.
Ah, okay, I see.
When you are in the before window, the momentum is either neutral or it is actively working in your favor.
You have leverage.
Yes, because your decisions dictate the velocity. You are pushing the snowball.
But if you allow negative momentum to build,
If you allow debt to compound or lifestyle inflation to consume all your liquidity,
the mass of the financial burden just becomes too large.
exactly. It becomes so massive that your baseline income is no longer sufficient to alter its trajectory.
You literally lose the ability to apply adequate opposing force.
Yes. Let me give you a concrete example.
Please.
If you have $100 of debt at a 20% interest rate,
Okay, pretty standard credit card stuff.
you can easily apply the force of $120 from your paycheck to eliminate it.
Yeah.
You are in control.
Yeah, you just wipe it out.
But if you have $100,000 of debt at a 20% interest rate,
Oh, wow. The interest alone is staggering.
exactly. The compounded growth of that debt might actually outpace your entire discretionary income.
So even if you put every spare cent toward it, the balance still grows.
Yes. At that point, no matter how much intentionality or methodology you apply to your daily budget, the mathematical reality of the debt dictates your life.
You have crossed the threshold.
The momentum has subjugated you.
Man, to map that onto human behavior, I think we have to look at how we navigate attention on a daily basis.
Attention is the key currency here.
Right, because the process of losing control to negative financial momentum, it's rarely a deliberate choice to ruin one's life, right?
No one wakes up and says, "I think I'll ruin my financial future today."
No, it is almost always a failure of sustained attention.
Yes.
It is exactly like the phenomenon of micro sleeps behind the wheel of a vehicle.
Oh, that's a brilliant comparison.
Yeah.
A failure of executive vigilance.
Right. Think about it. When you are driving on a featureless highway late at night, the sensory input is totally monotonous.
Just the hum of the road, the dark sky.
Exactly. And your brain naturally seeks to conserve energy by lowering its state of arousal.
It starts shutting down.
Yeah. You don't consciously decide to fall asleep. You just experience a series of cognitive microlapses.
Your eyes droop for a second, then 2 seconds.
Right. And in personal finance, these microlapses are the unexamined subscriptions you forgot to cancel.
Or the impulsive, frictionless purchases we talked about earlier.
Yes. Or just the decision to defer saving for retirement because the future feels so abstract and far away.
You are drifting in your lane.
Exactly.
You're drifting. And the really insidious part is that the brain actually justifies this drift through a concept called hyperbolic discounting.
Oh, I've heard of this. Explain the mechanism of hyperbolic discounting in this context because it's so relevant.
It's fascinating. Hyperbolic discounting is a cognitive bias where people consistently choose smaller, immediate rewards over larger, delayed rewards.
Like taking $50 today instead of $100 in a year.
Exactly. And the preference for that immediate reward grows exponentially as the time to receive it shrinks.
Okay, so how does that look neurologically?
Well, neurologically, the human brain really struggles to empathize with its future self.
Wait, we can't empathize with ourselves.
Not our future selves, no.
Yeah.
fMRI scans actually show that when people are asked to imagine themselves a decade in the future, the brain regions that activate are the exact same regions used when thinking about a complete stranger.
Wait, really? A complete stranger?
Yes. The brain doesn't recognize future you as you.
So the brain views saving money as literally giving your resources away to a stranger.
Precisely. The brain screams at the immediate dopamine hit of a purchase today
Or just the immediate relief of avoiding a complex financial decision.
is far more valuable than providing abstract stability for this stranger 10 years from now.
That is wild. This cognitive bias actively encourages the micro sleeps.
It does. It heavily incentivizes you to let the car drift.
But the source text, going back to the word before, it acts as the rumble strip on the edge of the highway.
Yes. The rumble strip.
It is a mechanism specifically designed to jolt your executive function awake.
Because if you hit that rumble strip, the vibration and the noise, it spikes your adrenaline.
Right. It is highly unpleasant. It induces panic.
But you still have the leverage of the steering wheel.
Exactly. And the friction of the tires on the pavement. You can still execute a violent correction and pull the vehicle back into the lane.
Because you are still operating in the before.
The leverage remains intact.
If you ignore the rumble strip,
Or if your cognitive bias convinces you that you can handle driving on the shoulder.
Which so many people do. I can handle this credit card debt, it's fine.
Right. You eventually drop a tire off the pavement and into the mud of the ditch.
And the exact millisecond that tire leaves the pavement,
Your agency evaporates.
the steering wheel basically becomes a prop.
The brakes become useless. The trajectory of the vehicle is now entirely dictated by the geometry of the ditch, the mass of the car, and the physics of gravity.
You have transitioned from the driver to just a captive payload in a kinetic event.
You have been captured by the momentum.
Exactly. And the really terrifying part of the financial ditch is that the environment dictates the final outcome.
The environment, you mean like the banks?
The creditors, the collection agencies, the hyperinflated penalty interest rates.
The eviction notices.
Yes, those are the forces of gravity pulling you further down the embankment.
Man, so the text uses the word before as this existential warning.
A command to wake up while the tires are still on the asphalt.
This forces a really critical self-examination for anyone listening, anyone analyzing their own position.
It really does.
Because how does an individual accurately diagnose whether they are on the asphalt, hitting the rumble strip, or if they're already in the ditch?
It's hard to tell from the inside.
Right. Because the financial ecosystem is designed to obscure these boundaries.
Oh, absolutely. The availability of revolving credit can make the ditch feel like a smoothly paved road for a very long time.
You can be in free fall and just think you're cruising.
So, how do you diagnose it?
Well, I would argue that the threshold is not defined by external metrics at all, like not by your net worth or your credit score.
Okay, interesting. What is it defined by?
I think the threshold is defined entirely by the presence or absence of cognitive dissonance regarding your financial reality.
Okay, that requires some unpacking. How does cognitive dissonance serve as the diagnostic tool here?
Well, think about what cognitive dissonance is. It's the psychological friction that occurs when your actions contradict your deeply held beliefs or values.
Right, when you do something you know you shouldn't be doing.
Exactly. So if you are operating on the asphalt, if you're in control, your financial actions align with your goals.
There is no dissonance.
Right. You allocate capital, you follow your methodology, and you sleep soundly.
Makes sense.
But if you are hitting the rumble strip, you experience severe cognitive dissonance.
You know you are over-leveraged.
You know you are spending impulsively. You feel the anxiety of that creeping vine we talked about.
Yes.
That dissonance is your biological alarm system telling you that your methodology is failing.
The pain of the dissonance is actually the evidence that your executive function is still fighting for control.
Yes, exactly. But, and here's the scary part. If you drop into the ditch and the momentum fully takes over, a horrifying psychological adaptation occurs.
To survive the stress.
Yes, to survive the extreme stress of total subjugation, the brain often resolves the cognitive dissonance through learned helplessness.
Ah, learned
The
helplessness.
individual just adopts total financial fatalism.
They construct a narrative that the whole system is entirely rigged anyway.
That debt is just an inescapable human condition.
That personal agency is a myth. Why even try?
Exactly. They surrender the concept of autonomy just to soothe the psychological pain of losing it.
They stop fighting the steering wheel and just wait for the car to crash.
Exactly. Therefore, the before window, that window of leverage, it remains open exactly as long as you are willing to tolerate the pain of cognitive dissonance and actually use it as fuel for correction.
The moment you accept financial chaos as your permanent identity, the window closes.
The parasite has fully integrated into the host.
Wow. This really brings the profound density of this 11-word text into sharp focus.
Doesn't it? It's crazy how much is in there.
It is not merely dispensing generic budgeting advice.
Not at all.
It is outlining the fundamental architecture of modern freedom.
I totally agree. We have extracted three, I think, non-negotiable pillars from this single sentence.
Let's recap them. First, the absolute necessity of a constructed methodology.
A how-to.
Right. The refusal to treat capital as some unmanageable force of nature. You must build the levees.
You must saddle the horse.
Exactly. And second, the recognition of the hostile vacuum.
The understanding that if you do not actively project your executive function onto your resources,
the meticulously engineered modern ecosystem will exploit your biological biases.
it will hijack your dopamine pathways and it will subjugate your decision-making capabilities.
It's an active threat. And third, the tyranny of time.
The before.
the acknowledgement that momentum is compounding every single second. It's either working for you or against you.
The word before is the ultimate forcing function.
It demands immediate conscious confrontation with your reality while you still possess the leverage to actually alter it.
So bringing this all together for everyone listening, the ultimate takeaway here is that your capital is either a highly efficient engine propelling you toward autonomy,
or it is the very mechanism of your captivity.
The source text leaves absolutely no room for debate on this dichotomy.
None at all.
So we want to leave you with this final mechanism to consider today, something to really chew on.
Final thought.
If the modern financial ecosystem is an entity engineered to quietly take the wheel while you microsleep,
what is the single most disruptive point of friction you can introduce into your life today?
Right. What is the smallest, easiest action you can take right now to firmly put your hands back on the wheel and prove unequivocally that your executive function is still in command?
Because the architecture of control really does begin with a single deliberate constraint.
Build the cage. Until next time, keep exploring the mechanisms of your world and keep taking the deep dive.